Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. And if you are watching live, you are joining us for the what seems like weekly version of our Friday lunch show. And I am joined today by Rafi Jamgachian from Triada Networks. Rafi, how are you doing, sir?
Good, Marvin. How are you?
I am doing good, although I need to first let everybody know, out of honesty and transparency, usually I come on the show and talk about how I'm recording live from Fort Lauderdale, where it's another gorgeous day. Most of the time, that's true. Today, it's not. It is raining and muggy. So
that's too bad. It's sunny here in bright New Jersey.
Oh, so we swapped roles, apparently. Yeah,
apparently.
Because isn't it usually muggy and smoggy and something up there?
We'll get our muggy weather later on in the summer.
Okay. All right. So, here we are on Friday. And just kind of hanging out and chatting. So let me start with, I wanted to do a quick recap. So I know that on a show last week, somebody in the chat had messaged us and saying that they were trying to get in touch with Connect Me Voice. And that was a company that I had on about a month ago. And the person, I believe Kevin, had contacted Connect Me Voice and did not hear back from them. And I said that I would look into that. I didn't have time to, but somebody else did. And I already received a message back from Connect Me Voice. And basically, they said that they did get some feedback about a partner prospect who did not get outreach from an inquiry. Of course, this is something we never want to happen and will assure cannot happen again. I have reached out to Kevin to discuss this, blah, blah, blah. I won't get into the rest of it. But Rafi was at Connect Me Voice when we did that podcast. And so Rafi just wanted to give that feedback that they did reach out to Kevin and straighten that out. And I hope that everybody else that's reached out to them gets the response as well. But you're no longer at Connect Me Voice. What happened?
Yeah, so Connect Me Voice, I joined last year, actually the end of 2018, and spent all of 2019 and early 2020 with them. And we had already, by the time we were doing that podcast episode, I had already provided my notice that I was planning on going back to the MSP full time, so to speak, and focus on that. And luckily we did, because this mess wouldn't have fixed itself if I wasn't around, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you made the choice before that. So that was before COVID-19.
It was before COVID-19. My last show was ASCII LA. They knew that prior to going to that was going to be my last one.
All right.
I was their channel chief for a year, try to get a little bit more channel experience into the company. And then, decided to go back to my roots, so to speak.
You missed the other side, didn't you?
I did. I went back to the light.
So how has it been for you since coming back? I should probably go ahead and ask you that, because that's, you know, you decide to come back and then this hits, and I don't know if it affected your business at all.
It was kind of nuts because we were in ASCII Long Beach, and the first sprinklings of Corona started flittering into California at the time. My wife was out with me at the show. We decided to spend a few more extra days, and then we just started seeing the masks show up at the airport on the way home and things like that. And then all craziness kind of broke loose after that. And fortunately, like I said, fortunately, if otherwise we wouldn't have been able to, you know, I would have had to have left the company in a different state because there was no way that my tech on his own would have been able to deal with all the issues that we had to deal with, you know, when we flipped over. So, yeah. So just within a few days, we did our final kind of cleanup. We started working with some of the clients that maybe weren't as ready as we would like. And then, you know, the craziness began from there.
Okay. Well, glad things are going well. And, you know, things happen for a reason and timing happens for a reason. So
no doubt.
Not for you.
No doubt.
Okay. I want to do one other thing out of format. And for the regular listeners, you're laughing because sometimes you listen as if I don't have a format, but I try to keep the show on track. But one of the things that I usually leave for the end of the show is the Florida Man versus the World segment. And I have really been trying to figure out how to do that segment, of course. And I spent last night going through my headlines that I was going to look for and introduce, because Rafi is in New Jersey and there is usually a Jersey Man story, so I thought it might work out. So I just need to do this, and I don't know if you have a story, Rafi, but so here's the headlines of stuff that I was looking through, and this is all within the last 24 to 48 hours. So here are the headlines. Florida man arrested for malnourished and neglected horses out of Okeechobee, Florida. That's near my good friend Chris Tobal. Here we go. Florida man dead after daughter accidentally hits him with truck during driving lesson. Florida man caught on camera pulling out gun at supermarket. Florida man used coronavirus to cover up wife's murder. Florida man loses leg while surfing. 13-year-old diver finds it, returns it to him. Florida man dives into Bass Pro Shop fish tank, posts video on Facebook. Florida man is arrested for exposing his genitals to women while driving. Florida man who recorded himself running red light on Snapchat before crash that killed two is arrested.
Oof.
So those were the stories I got to pick from. But I get up this morning and I see that someone had sent me at 12:59 a.m. a story titled "Florida Teen Stung Over 600 Times After Inserting His Penis into Beehive."
That's a winner.
So just the headline alone has got to make that the top story. But of course, while reading it, I actually got a better kick out of it, because so his dad and mom are like having an interview explaining this to somebody. And the dad says one of his friends told him that having sex was like putting your penis inside a jar of warm honey. So I don't know, first of all, who at age 14 would know that. But the dad continues, "I guess there wasn't any honey around," his father told reporters laughingly, visibly grateful his son was still alive. So first of all, his dad is laughing as he's talking to reporters about this.
Wow.
And then he continues, "I mean, I understand the urge, but if you have to do it in a Kleenex, for God's sake, and leave the bees alone."
I'm glad he's thinking about the environment.
Yes. So,
yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. Our Jersey stories come out after Memorial Day, typically, when everyone goes to the shore. And so the governor is opening up the beaches this weekend, next weekend. And so we'll see the funny stories will come out afterwards.
Right. You'll get a bunch of those. You guys usually have it when the summertime, right? And that's after right. The weather warms up, people are out. And
yes, when the nut jobs that should have stayed home don't.
All right. So I just wanted to make sure I recognize that. And I have my good friend Adam to thank me, to thank for that at 12:59 a.m. looking out for the show. All right. So now let's get to the meaty part of today. And let's talk about first. I mean, I know that I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on you leaving Connect Me Voice and heading back to the MSP world, but let's go ahead and talk about your MSP from the beginning.
Sure.
How long have you been doing IT work? When did you start Triada Networks? All that good stuff.
Yeah. So my superhero story. So I studied engineering in college, and within a few years left the engineering world into IT, started working for an investment firm for about a dozen years, worked my way up. And then when one of the managers started his own investment firm, I helped him start that up in 2006 with the idea that it would be too small just for me to stay there, that I would spin out and start my own IT firm after that. And so in 2008, we started Triada Networks. It was right after the Lehman crash that year. So, you know, in the middle of kind of the whirlwind going on with financial services, I just started an IT firm servicing financial services companies. So it's, I guess, you know, glutton for punishment, something. I don't know what it was, but that's when we started up.
All right. Well, interesting that you actually got a niche that early. And of course, working in that industry, that helped. So,
good. Yeah. Our first couple of clients were people that we knew. You know, what happened was, as these companies started shrinking and collapsing and more regulatory scrutiny came under the larger firms, these smaller guys decided to start their own shops. And so a few of them came out of Invesco and said, "We're starting our own shop. Can you help us out?" And I said, "All right, this looks like it's good timing to get going." So I had kind of a built-in initial three client base that we built from there. And, you know, my initial pricing was, okay, take my salary, divide it by three, split it up. And then that's kind of how we, you know, then we backed into what our real program was.
Okay. Now, I came across the story that one of the reasons you got interested into IT more in the investment industry was because the place where you were working at the time got the Code Red virus.
Yes, that's true. In 2001, early 2001, I had been there for 4 or 5 years. At that point, we were doing just kind of help desk and networking and what have you, whatever we needed to get done. And then we got a Code Red outbreak in the firm. And I think at the time, if I remember correctly, there were versions of Windows XP that automatically had internet information server running on it, a web server running on it. And that's what Code Red used to spread around. And the triaging and kind of trying to figure out what happened and how the virus got in and how it spread kind of intrigued me. And that's kind of what started me on my cybersecurity track. And so then from there, we kind of built, I had already built the first firewalls of the company, and we just kind of went with it. And that's kind of how that all started. So yeah, that definitely pushed me in further into the cyber world.
Okay. Now, what were you doing before? Because I also read somewhere that you kind of have always been in the computers. Your dad was a programmer?
Yeah, my dad's and still is. He is one of the few COBOL programmers still around. He works for a larger investment firm still. And he's 70 some odd years old and still programming away from home during all of this mess. But yeah, so that's how we started. And 7 years old, I got my first TI-99/4 and started coding on that and playing games. And then we got this giant CPM machine that took up half the garage that we wrote up. I don't know if everyone remembers, dating myself now, there was a program called Eliza, which is a basic program that basically sounded like it was like a psychologist. It would ask you questions, you would answer, and, you know, back and forth. So, you know, type that up, you know, write in all the code, you get the code books and kind of type up the code. That's kind of how I learned into getting into computers from there.
Okay.
So been around computers for a long time, went to do computer engineering. I thought I was going to design and build them. I didn't think I'd get into IT, but the draw of IT pulled me in.
The draw of IT, because back when we were getting
better than engineering, that's what
I was going to say. Because back when we were starting, there really wasn't, you know, IT was kind of not defined outside of the corporate structure. There weren't too many companies that were able to be outsourced to, I guess.
Right. At the time. So I graduated college in 93, and then my first IT job was in 95. So it was fairly. You know, that's kind of the time frame that we were talking about.
Okay.
Pre-internet, it's kind of, that's when we actually started at connecting to the internet shortly after that. So,
all right. Yeah. With the US Robotics 56, 14.4 modems.
Go back. Yeah. We had an ISDN line at the company. I had put one in my own house. That was my first,
you spent some money.
Connection. Yeah. We spent some money on that. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
My first job there was, I had to build all the overnight scripts that ran all the processing at night for being ready for doing trading the following day. So before we had an overnight operator, I had to build in a lot of these automations and things like that. So I was constantly online, you know, work, pretty much working really long, late hours and then early hours.
Right.
So, fun times. So,
interesting, because you were working back in that industry before security really became a huge thing. Now, I had to imagine there was security. I mean, you didn't want people to be able to hack stuff and get traded, but were you doing a ton of security back then?
We really weren't, other than kind of the typical AV. I mean, we didn't have firewalls in place when we first joined. There was no internet connection. I brought in, you know, I was part of the team that brought in the first internet connections there. We built some initial air-gapped systems where we had one computer that pulled down email, then ran it over a serial cable to another computer, and then that would deliver internal email that way. It was all running CC mail back then.
Oh, CC mail, okay.
Yeah, and then later on, when we actually ended up connect, we didn't have a TCP, it was a Novell network. We didn't have a TCP IP stack, so we had to build that in so that people can actually start browsing with their...
What were you doing? The token ring?
It was NetWare's IPX. Was
NetWare? Okay. Yeah.
So our database servers, everything were running on NetWare. You know, we then started introducing IP and then Windows, Windows servers later on. But in the beginning days, it was all still Novell. And then Windows 90, it was actually Windows 3.1, then 95, then XP later on.
Yeah, good old Windows 3.1.1 for workgroups.
Yes.
Awesome. Wow. All right. So it's been a long journey then. So what do you guys, I know that you said you focused on investment firms as your niche now, but, you know, is it strictly cybersecurity or are you doing basically a full stack for them?
No, we're doing a full stack. I mean, I guess I'm one of the few people that went from cybersecurity into as an MSP rather than the other way around. You see a lot of MSPs kind of leaving the MSP world and becoming security only guys. We're a full stack in that sense, pretty much other than programming, you know, custom development, we kind of handle and do nearly everything else. But yeah, most of our clients are still investments, about 80% are investments. We do have some outside of that. Once in a while, we'll get, you know, some referral for something. Like our largest client is a cosmetics chemical company. You know, they were interested in protecting IP, and so, you know, they tapped us to help them build a structure around that.
All right. So I've been waiting to ask. I see that you've got the IT glue shirt on.
I do have an
IT glue. I have to assume IT glue is part of your stack.
It is. I had this shirt before that, actually. But
really?
It's really comfortable. They make some nice shirts.
Yeah, I've got IT glue. I don't have that shirt though. I'm gonna have to.
Yeah, you have to ask for it. It's probably the most comfortable T-shirt in my drawer for sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'll ask the question that you know, we typically ask, you know, first time interviewees: what's in your stack?
What isn't in my stack? Too much, Marvin. I have a bad reputation of buying everything. So you know, we're a Datto shop. We use Datto RMM, Autotask PSA. We do use IT glue. So we started rolling out Domotes actually early in this year we had played around with some of the other network monitoring tools. Domotes was the best for balancing between price and kind of what it provided for us. So really happy with that. We have that in place. I have a couple boxes waiting to be deployed because we had gotten them right before this craziness started. But then we have like a really deep security stack. Like we use CrowdStrike and ThreatLocker on our endpoints. We started deploying cyber CNS for vulnerability reporting and management, continuous scanning. Dark cubed for firewall monitoring, and then Rocket Cyber we use for logging and that sort of thing. So it's kind of we do a heavy thing on that, more than we probably should.
Okay. But interesting that you mentioned Domotes. Of course, I've started with Domotes earlier this year as well. And I've actually got 15 boxes that I'm waiting to send out.
And, yeah, you got the customized ones. I didn't do that.
Oh, yeah, I did. I wanted to have my logo on them so that customers wouldn't try to do an end run around me.
That's right.
So, all right. So you said you looked at some others. Did you look at like Oversea or?
We did have Oversea in place. I felt like half the time they weren't running, and decided to kind of move away from that. We still have, I think, still some Arachnus equipment out there. Mm-hmm. But the Oversea product really didn't do it. And there was a sale at one point where the devices were really cheap.
Oh yeah.
So we bought a whole bunch of them. And not terribly crazy happy about that. We did run Ovic for a while too. And Ovic was really good, but it was a lot of pretty pictures that was a costly bill. And every now and then you go through your stack and you say, do we really need this stuff? And let's start scratching it. But I still always wanted something on the network, because I think a lot of the performance stuff that we run into, you really can't, you know, if you have managed systems out there, without having something looking at it, what's the point? So that's kind of why we started looking at PRTG and a couple other things, and then we settled on Domos because it was kind of a nice balance of easy to deploy, cheap, good information, at least for us.
Yeah, it's funny because Oversea, actually, I think I got an email either yesterday or the day before that they finally rebuilt their portal, mm-hmm. and saying it was faster and, you know, did more stuff. So I popped into it. I actually still have two Oversea boxes still on site. It's part of the 15 I need to get out there.
Right.
So I did go in and you know, play around to see, you know, I mean, it is a little faster, but Domotes still does things better, especially, you know, when I can, you know, deep dive into the managed switches, see the interfaces, you know, see the port speed, you know, of each of those ports. What else I can say? I can see into, not just my firewall, but my access points. So I've got some Ruckus access points down there and the Domotes box, I can actually get in there and see clients and see the SSIDs, you know, from the Domotes portal. So that works out really nice.
Domotes provides some really detailed, for the price, really good detailed information, to the point where you can even see, you know, I think if I remember correctly, devices on which switch ports there are, and then
yes,
like that. So that has become really helpful when we're trying to troubleshoot things. Network troubleshooting has never been a really strong point of mine. And so I've been always a systems guy, not a networking guy. So, you know, anything that kind of dumbs that down for me is a good start.
Well, Domotes and you know, another edge that it has over the others, I mean, a lot of network scanning stuff will be able to identify devices.
Right.
But you're right. They won't be able to tell you which port in the switch they're on. You usually still have to go into the switch to do that. Whereas Domotes, you know, some switches are automatic. Some switches you have to put in the password to get in. But once you do that, it's there. And you can see, you know, everything you need to see. And even when it tells you, you know, there are, you know, two or three devices behind this port. So it really helps. With that, I'm still playing with the VLAN on it. So I'm trying to get the VLAN portal to work so I can see multiple VLANs through there. That's really the only thing I haven't played with. But everything else, you know, I like. Even the, you know, even the speed test for internet, you know, it's every 4 hours. It's not, you know, perfect, but, you know, that's still pretty good.
Yeah, especially if you have a company that is using cable or one of these shared fiber services, you know, and knowing when they're having bandwidth problems is a good deal. We say, you know, as MSPs, we always want to be proactive. It's one of those things that allows us to kind of bump up our game a little bit, where, you know, oh, by the way, we know something's going on before you do, for sure.
Right. I just thought of something. One of the things that I also liked is that the reporting of down devices, if you've got stuff set up as important devices, the reporting for that is so much faster than my RMM, my Oversea Pro, and a couple other stuff that I've used. So actually just two nights ago, I've got a customer where we didn't have them set up with the SD-WAN, but we had them set up with WAN failover.
Okay.
and it was just basic active passive, and they went down at 8:30 at night. And of course I'm thinking, oh crap, you know, and I could have waited till mm-hmm. the next day to deal with it, but I said, you know what, let me run over. They're less than 15 minutes away, see if their building has power. They did. I went in and I'm looking at all the equipment, making sure, you know, server didn't go down or fire. Everything was up and running, but the primary internet connection was up, but not passing traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it didn't do the failover. So I was frustrated. You know, it took me a little time to figure that out because I'm thinking, okay, is there a DNS issue with the server? You know, but once I figured that out,
so what fixed it?
Well, I went into SonicWall and put it on SD-WAN because the new.
So you forced the flip over in that case. You forced the flip.
Yes, okay. I forced the flip. But in the SD-WAN connection, so they added SD-WAN separate from failover to where SD-WAN will just, you know, sense a down connection even if it's up and force the second connection. So I did that. Called the internet service provider. They didn't get it fixed till like almost noon the next day. So, but my customer had no worries. They were up, they were running, but I wouldn't have known that without the Domo. So, well, I probably would have known it through the RMM, but it would have been later. Sometimes it takes up to an hour for those alerts to come out. I probably would have said, I'm not going.
So when you're doing that, when you have those situations where you have multiple connections, does that client have anything that they're hosting internally that you need to reroute other things like change DNS records or anything like that? Or
on most of my clients, no, because the ones that do have that stuff, they are actually set up with an MPLS and the SD-WAN is actually run by the ISP.
Right.
So all of that's already done. I don't have to do it myself. This particular customer didn't have anything internal, but they did have two external remote users that we had to switch their VPN over to a different IP. So, which means that the next time we get to revamp their VPN servers, we're going to try to go with the SSL VPN portal and hopefully not have to worry about that.
Hmm.
So cool. That was it.
Yeah.
All right. Now we had also talked, you had asked me about our hub.
Yeah, I heard your episode on R-Hub, and you know, we were looking at an alternative remote control tool. You know, we had used ConnectWise Control or Screen Connect back in the day, had eliminated that at one point. So right now we've been using Splashtop. It comes with Datto RMM, but we also have a separate license for them for doing kind of ad hoc and some unattended stuff outside of the RMM, just in case we can't get into Datto for some reason.
Right.
And actually, in the past couple of weeks, we've had a few instances where Datto RMM was down. But it's tied to Datto RMM. So if Splashtop is not working, you know, Datto has some other remote tools that usually will work. But I was looking for something to kind of separate that from that, and whether, you know, the kind of the R-Hub's idea of purchasing it once and kind of leaving it around would be was an interesting thought exercise. However, we're a virtual team. I don't have an office anymore. I haven't had an office for 4 years. I'd have to host it somewhere else and then or stick it in my house. And it's like, maybe that's not the best idea for us. So, we're still poking on that. It's not something that's a super high necessity, but you know, whenever we have, we're relying on all these connections, out there, you never know when one of these solutions is going to fail you and you need another plan. So,
that is a thing against R-Hub sometimes, is that it is an appliance and you've got to put it somewhere. So I think that I haven't asked them, but I think that they might be looking at doing some sort of hosted solution at some point. They've got some streaming servers that they're doing with their streaming devices.
Right.
So I think that it's a logical step for them to provide another hosting solution. But I've had the appliance. Well, this is my second. I've had this one in probably about 5 years, but I had the other one before that, maybe 5 or 6 years as well.
Okay. So they last.
They do.
So the one idea was to take it and stick it at one of our clients that had extra IP addresses, and we can kind of put it on a separate segment or something like that.
Yeah.
that's another option that we're looking at. You know, we do have some clients that are fairly flexible about what we stick in their offices pretty much, you know, anyway. Right. So,
okay. Now, what about the Domotes boxes? Cause you know, you can use those for remote access.
That's true. I haven't used any of their, I guess for like servers and stuff, you can probably do an RDP tunnel through that, right?
Yep, so absolutely. That's
definitely another option. I guess I was thinking more on the ad hoc needs for clients that are we can't connect to a desktop. You know, in that case, you know, we can always look at something like an instant house call or whatever. We've played around with a lot of different ones over the years. So I think in a pinch, we could probably spin something else up if we need to.
Okay. So. I forget about the ad hoc. That's the whole reason I have the R Hub is my one-offs.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we, you know, a lot of times I like using the splash top through the remote, the RMM, because it logs that activity. You know, we want our text to do that as well, but we still have the direct splash top in many cases, particularly for our key server, so that we could do a quick install. But I forgot about the Domotes remote desktop. I should play around that a little bit more.
It's quite surprising how much those boxes do. So
yeah.
For listeners out there, I know that I've done a show with them and I've talked about it a couple of times. I know that in the MSP Unplugged community, Paco had them on one of his shows. They are somebody that you want to look at. So head over to the show note that I have with all the shows. You'll find a link to the Domotes box that you can purchase from Amazon. And I probably need to update a link to the Domotes site just to have everybody be able to see that. And that's Domotz. And a very nice box.
Yeah. We started looking at them prior to when they before they started this whole MSP kind of kick, and it wasn't quite there yet, but they've gone a long way in a short period of time.
Yeah, it's funny because I know that I heard about them. I want to say 3 years ago that they had started popping up on my radar, and it was the end of last year, probably October, November, when I saw their MSP platform, I guess, even though it's not officially MSP. Yeah. And I said, you know what, let me give it a look. Actually, let me go back. And because I actually tried to, you may or may not find this funny. So I have never been anybody but a Windows guy.
Okay.
Never been into Linux, never been into, you know, custom open source or whatever. And I thought, you know what, I need to start paying attention and looking at stuff. So I saw that Domotes, you don't always have to buy the box. You can just get the software and install it wherever you want. So I thought I'll use this as an opportunity to build a Raspberry Pi. And I'll put Domotes on there. And I got all the Raspberry stuff and the box and the memory and the, you know, SD card. And it cost me like, I don't know, $88.
Right.
And then I downloaded the software and couldn't get it to run and called Domotes and they said this. And they said, well, you know, if you just went ahead and buy the box, you'd have all of this extra stuff. And the box is $99. Why am I wasting my time? And,
exactly.
You know, not that there's anything wrong with the Raspberry Pi and open source, but it's like, you know what? I just don't have time to play around and just give me the box. It's already configured.
Yeah, we started doing the same thing with some display panels and things like that. We started playing around with Pis for that, and it's a pain. You know, and then forget about even just managing them. The overseat boxes are kind of like Raspberry Pis, aren't they? They're like soldered in Raspberry Pis, the same kind of, you know. So I don't know. I like them. They're cool little, you know, things to play around with, but I don't know if I'm putting them out there as a mainstay of our business for sure.
So we'll see. But I like Domotes right now, and I like to see my logo on it too. It's really nice. You should think about that.
Yeah. Well, when we get enough of them, until then I have some stickers I can slap on if I need to.
Okay. All right. So So we got away from Triadanet's story. So what else can you tell us about you? What else do you guys do? What trends are you seeing right now? And
yeah, so from we've been a security focused MSP. You hear that a lot lately for a while, and you know that's kind of where we focus our attention, particularly when we talk to clients or prospects. It's interesting. Prospecting now is different, for sure. And you know, the referrals have not, you know, they're not coming through, but one of the things that we're doing is we're collecting a lot of, testimonial stuff that maybe we didn't have before, and even new testimonials kind of related to, the COVID situation, how we've helped clients kind of get up and running and things like that. I think at some point we're going to see, not too far in the future, as companies come back to more normal, then they're going to turn around and start firing MSPs that didn't help them out when they needed to.
Right.
Not that I relish that thought of people kind of losing their livelihood, but there's going to be an opportunity, I think, for the ones, some of us that are, you know, maybe a little bit switched on a little bit better, that can kind of pick up that, you know. We're a small firm, and you know, one of the big negatives that we always got back when we talked to prospective clients is that we're too small. And you know, we've tried outsourced help desk and all that kind of other things to kind of make ourselves bigger than we really are, but it's really never been as good as, you know, when we had our own staff to do certain things. And right now we have it's just a team of two of us. It's me, one other tech, and then my wife helps out, similar to your wife does, on some operational stuff. So we, you know, that's essentially the sum total of our team. I have four sons. Likely one will enter the business. Right now he's actually working for a competitor MSP that he just got a full-time job with. He had done some internships. He's their friend. He's a friend of ours, close by, Ed Mana. And he's, you know, that, you know, learning from kind of all the different things. I want him to learn from somebody else before he comes home, and so to speak. So hopefully one or more of them will get more involved in the business and we'll kind of grow from there. But I think having that support structure in-house, especially for the kind of high-touch service that we tend to have to do, because the financial business tends to be, they like a lot of touchy-feely.
Right.
My guess is that the lawyers that you work with are probably a little bit similar in some cases. So we've been, that's the part of it, I think, is a little bit difficult when you're dealing with, calling somebody in Canada or whatever, and then, all right, we'll call you back. And like, that's not what they want to hear. You know, I'm used to the traders that smash their phones on their desks and things like that. Those things did happen in the 90s, especially. But it was, you know, that's kind of what informed us on how to do what are the support that we do now. Right. So, you know, that's the trend that we're seeing. We're going to see some of those folks will probably have more remote work, but they still want to come back to the office and go back to their old routines. And then there's probably going to be a number of clients that prospects that will need that additional help from other people. So That's our thing. I mean, security keeps changing. You know, there's stuff coming on, the threats all the time. I listen to every other podcast out there on security, so it's kind of one of those things where there's a lot out there to learn and do. And right. So one of the things that I've been toying with is actually putting out our own podcast, more geared towards business owners than techies. There's tons out there for techies. There's less so for cyber, for business owners. So kind of really, you know, kind of cybersecurity in plain English kind of thing. So on a podcast feed near you soon, one of those days. So we've outlined a few episodes. So hopefully I actually get off my backside and get that out there.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, everybody's starting a podcast now.
Yes. And it's funny. And now they're saying the podcast, and you probably know better. You're in that business. podcast listenership is down now during the quarantine. Less people are listening, my guess, because they're not commuting, they're not doing whatever. You know, I'd listen, do all most of my podcast listening when I took up bike riding, you know, during the quarantine. So that's when I do most of my podcast listening, is during my hour or so bike riding. So that has become my commute, so to speak, kind of the end of the day, decompress. So it'll be interesting to see if and how podcasts come back. But I think I wanted to almost have like a body of work that I can point people to and just say, hey, by the way, if you're interested in this topic, here's something we've talked about already. And just short things, you know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I'm not a talker. So I can't see myself doing, unless you're doing conversational podcasts like you are, it's difficult to, I'm not going to talk for an hour on my own for sure.
Right. Yeah. Trust me, I can't do that. My stories usually aren't interesting, but as you said, listening is down. And I think some of it has to do with commuting. I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that, you know, I think people are on overload with, you know, not just podcasts, but, you know, the video meetings.
And
it's like, you know what? I don't need to do this right now. So they're trying to keep themselves occupied with other stuff.
Right.
And of course, with everybody starting a podcast, the listenership is getting spread out.
Sure.
So it's, you know, how many podcasts can you really listen to? And, you know, we're all, at least from my perspective,
too many.
My areas, you know, focusing on a tech podcast, you know, I'm competing with other techs and I'm competing with vendors, you know, because the techs want to hear from vendors. So why not go to a vendor podcast?
Right.
You know, which then it turns around is, why would a vendor come on this podcast to try to reach, you know, techs, because they're already listening to their podcast. So it's, it's a struggle. It'll be interesting to see how things go. And, you know, as long as people keep listening and keep responding and sending me Florida man stories, I guess. So.
How are you dealing with all the other, the video stuff? Like, I find myself, on way too many, Zoom update calls from this and that, over the past couple weeks. And I have to think of how I'm going to pare that back, as, it's become a little bit of a time suck for me.
Are you talking about you being a part of it and doing it, or you just
mostly it's listening? Yeah, mostly it's just listening and watching. I have to start saying no and just say, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm done. And you know, it's trying to do it in a way that's not disrespectful to the people that are doing it. But you know, how many podcasts or how many webinars and how many Zoom meetings can you have on, you know, remote support tips during COVID-19?
Right.
How to work remotely. I mean, at some point we've already, you know, we should already be past all that.
Right.
So it's, but I know it's tough. I know that some people are just kind of getting around to putting their spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are just doing it to keep, you know, being in front of people. But for me, I'm done.
You know? Yeah. I'm getting there as well. And other than, I think, we have a peer group. I'm in the Taylor Business Group, and they do a weekly meeting where it's kind of like a town hall, and it's, you know, whatever is currently going on between, and there's usually a panelist, and that's usually very good. And so, there's usually different things on there. Like, we were talking about how is everyone getting prepped to reopen? And we're talking to, you know, some of the guys that are already opened up, you know, what are they going through and what are their processes they're going through and things like that. And I think those are things that might be useful. But you're right. There was a period of time where I was getting, there's probably four or five webinars almost a day on the PPP and whatever. And it was just like, all right, I know all that now. I can move on. You know, I could just...
Well, part of it from my perspective is, first of all, and I don't know if you did this, but I didn't apply for PPP. I didn't apply for the EIDL. I didn't go out looking for loans. And I don't, you know, I'm not trying to say this to be a braggart, but it was like I set up my business and my house with an emergency fund.
Yeah.
So that if something like this happened, I could make it a couple of months. And my customers are still paying. So I don't think I have to worry about it, but I got this is going to sound horrible, but I got tired of hearing other techs complaining, you know, that they weren't getting their PPP. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. It's been a week. How are you already needing the PPP?
Right.
But I get what some of them are saying is, you know, look, if there's money out there, why not go get it? Why not prepare? Why not, you know, be ready? And I think a lot of people did it, you know, not needing the money.
Sure.
Not thinking they would need the money, but at least be approved that they could get the money. So,
I mean, you see the people who, you know, the money dried up, right? And so, especially the first time around. And so, 100%. I think, you know, for us, we're in a similar boat. We were very fortunate. I think we've only had one or two clients that are either shut down or so in a shape that they can't, you know, pay, or they're going to be slow payers, or they're going to defer their payment. You know, we went through all that, all those stages with them. You know, we've been very fortunate too. In fact, we actually have some clients that are paying faster because they're paying online rather than sending mailing out checks. So in some cases that's worked out really well, but, I didn't know what I didn't know. Like, I didn't know how, you know, so we applied, we did get a little bit. Unfortunately, it's based on 2019, income, and my 2019 income out of the business was, you know, essentially zilch, because I was working at Connect Me Voice at the time. So, it worked out differently. You know, it wasn't a lot of money, but it's, you know, it's something that I have now tucked away in a separate account that I'm using for payroll. And if, you know, that will help kind of deal with some of the, you know, short-term cash flow issues should something, you know, hit the fan. But, you know, my guess is that we'll end up having to probably pay some or most of that back, as a result of kind of how our businesses has worked through. But you know, that's one of those things where we were, you know, again, we were fortunate. You know, when I saw in the last turn down, I don't know how that affected you. For us, we were early, so it affected us only in terms of new biz. So that has been kind of a, you know, we've cut a lot of our costs out of our business. Particularly like I said, we were using the help desk. Our outsourced help desk was a big chunk of what our expenses were, the last few years. And so taking that out actually gave us some breathing room for us to deal with this kind of short-term, hopefully short-term. It's been a little bit longer than I expected, but, you know, short-term kind of stuff. I have been not as good with my money as you have when it comes to socking it away. So, you know, that's unfortunately one of the lessons I definitely learned out of this whole fiasco.
Well, I got lucky because I had to fight the wife to keep some of the money because she wanted to, you know, redo the backyard, redo the pool, redo. And I was like, okay, slow down. We're going to be here a while. We can spread that out. So we almost spent our savings, but we didn't. So we got lucky. So when you were talking about the last turn down, you talked about 2008, 2009.
And it was, you know, in the beginning of what we were, you know, starting. So it was kind of, I didn't know if that was the reality of how everything was going on. It's kind of how we learned, you know, how to deal with that. And so in the beginning, we were very conscious about what we're, you know, how to spend and whatever. And I think we probably went a little off the rails shortly after that when things got a little bit better for us. And unfortunately, one of the things that happens, I don't know if this happened to you, Marvin, maybe not because you're smarter than I am, but you were talking about Stack before. And so my problem has always been, I started out as an MSP. I didn't even know I was an MSP, but I started out that way, you know, fixed price, fixed contracts, inclusive, kind of all that kind of stuff. And so what ended up happening was I started, oh, that, I need that. I have to get that. And then I need that. I need to get that too in there because I need to fill this gap. But my prices didn't change, but my bottom line, kind of the watermark, kept going closer and closer. And so that squeezed margins smaller and smaller and smaller. And, you know, to a point where, you know, we had a few times where we hit a crisis point where we had to learn and kind of, all right, that's when we went through this cycle of cleaning up and getting rid of things. I think you were talking about in the last episode about, you know, Netflix and those kind of things. But, you know, that was us for, but in the business, you know, we were adding services all the time, you know, and that ended up becoming a problem. And so, you know, learning how to adjust for that and still dealing with some of that, because some of it you're under contract. And, you know, it's, you know, one example is I changed PSAs and RMMs a couple of years back. But I was still under contract with the previous one. So paring that back, now I was essentially paying for two RMMs for it. And I'm just finishing off the second one like this month. And that was, so 2 years I was paying for this other RMM that I wasn't wow. using. And I had to, because it was broken. It was, you know, there's nothing, and I couldn't do anything about that. But those are kinds of the silly mistakes along the way. You know, another one is, you know, I'm not gonna talk about who the vendor is, because you know, we're under litigation with them. But you know, we got caught up in this cloud services company. They were doing private clouds, and the concept around the cloud, and you can probably figure it out based on what I'm gonna say, is that you purchase a server or you lease a server, they would host it and manage it, and they would actually lease the time back to them. Mm-hmm. So you use some of it yourself, and then they would pay you for some of your own compute, right?
Yep.
So I'm still stuck with the lease payment. I'm still doing that. Great America still wants their nut, right? So, but they're not paying their part of it. They're not paying their. So it's definitely not like I would, if that was going to be the case, I would never have signed up, right? But they for basically the last 2 years, they haven't paid anything. So we ended up going to court. We did win. I'm not going to get that money, I'm sure. We'll see how the lawyers try to sort that out. It's in another state, you know, and most of the people are in another country. And, you know, those are the kinds of lessons I've learned, you know, along the way. Another one was, you know, I was a reseller for Video IQ cameras. I don't know if you remember Video IQ cameras. They're kind of like Axis, but on steroids. They did all that, this super AI kind of stuff before it was commonplace. $1,000 cameras. There was another MSP that needed some cameras in Florida. I bought and shipped it to them. This is back in like 09, 010, 2010.
Right.
He you know, didn't pay, declared bankruptcy. And, you know, we ended up, took him to court. We got some of the money back. You know, now he's a big shot at some cybersecurity firm, but you know, sometimes you learn from those mistakes. Like I was trusting another guy in the community, you know, and sending him stuff without getting paid, and then didn't get paid. You know, that's as a small company. If I was a bigger MSP or a bigger company, you know, maybe I could weather that. But as a small MSP, 15 grand on cameras, that's a lot of money, you know? And so same thing with this other service. So we've made those stupid, kind of learning, you know, expensive education things along the way. And it's, you know, so let that be a cautious tale to other MSPs out there. You know, we're luckily still in business. You know, it's, you know, despite my silly financial dealings along the way, but you know, 12 years almost. And so
we've all been there. I, you know, I've shared a couple of my stories. You know, I forgot to pay the IRS 1 year, you know. So, you know, had that hanging over my head for a little while, and I've made a lot of those mistakes. Mine are more, they're probably not as big, because I have never been big on, you know, just doing, you know, I like to research things. My wife always complains that when it comes time to buy an appliance or an electronic, I'll spend too much time researching. She hates that. She's like, just go get it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I don't want to waste money buying the wrong thing. So I do that with my business as well. So I wasn't always, you know, quick to jump on stuff. I have to tell vendors all the time, you know, call me next year, because I'm not making any changes the rest of this year.
Right.
You know, even if I'm in a bad deal, I'm not going to get stuck, you know, making another bad deal just because. And so I do that a lot. And you know, so in 2008, when you were talking about that, I still had techs that I was, you know, having in-house, but they weren't doing anything. Half the time they're sitting in the office playing, because they didn't have the motivation to go, you know, get a different certification so they can help me do something else. They weren't the type of techs that I could send out to go get business. And at that point in time, we had just started doing remote, and they weren't, what's the politically correct word to say to that? They weren't, they didn't have a radio friendly voice or attitude, I guess is the best way to say it. So I didn't want them talking to my customers. And I remember sitting around for a couple of months arguing with the wife. You know, she's like, well, you can't fire him. I'm like, well, why not? He's offering me money, you know. And she finally got to the point. She's like, you know what? You get up every morning angry. She's like, go ahead and let him go. But that's what started me on, you know, getting these remote support tools, getting, you know, devices in-house that could, you know, leverage my time better with, you know, whether it's hard drive, you know, duplicators so I could build systems faster, you know, I could spend $1,000 on that and, you know, build 5 machines in the time that it took one of my techs to do it. So,
right. That's smart. So I have the same thing with, you know, I've been, gawking at these, Fluke now, not Netscout, NetAlly. Tools for a long time. I end up buying. Yeah. See that I've been eyeing that thing, but you know, I can't give myself to actually pull the trigger on it. It's interesting. I ended up buying a used one off eBay, an older model. And that's actually been really super helpful, for just little things like, you know, checking, you know, making sure that cables are properly terminated and that the lengths are right and there's no break in the middle, and just right. Kind of where, what port on the switch that is that device plugged into, and you know, all those kind of things. And I would love to buy one of those things at one of these days, but it's on my list.
I can tell you this. So the tool that I have right now that I've been touting is the Etherscope NHG, and it's a smaller version of the One Touch. Mm-hmm. And yes, they are a lot of money. And I don't expect a lot of people to get these, but I can tell you this. I use these things almost every day. Well, not every day now because I'm not going out, but when I'm on site, I mean, for the customers that I have, you know, VLAN setups and stuff, I mean, just to run a quick test to verify that the VLAN is working properly in one area of the building or another, you know, the cable test, I take these when I do, you know, new router configurations, new mm-hmm. firewalls at customers, you know, before the vendor leaves, you know, I'm not only testing the configuration, I'm testing the speed of the internet from here.
Yeah.
I'm creating a report so that I can show the customer, yes, it was done right. And, I mean, there's so many other things in there that I can do. I can now, you know, the new ones, and they're coming out with more stuff with the wireless capabilities, but being able to see the environment of what's in the Wi-Fi around you, how many other access points are on conflicting channels, and, you know, what's the signal to noise ratio. And, you know, we can do that with apps on the phone and, you know, stuff we can load on the laptop, but they're not as good as the NetAlly tools that I have. And, you know, and I can quickly switch from app to app on here, as opposed to going from my phone, going to my tablet, going to right. my, you know, laptop, right. you know, downloading this software and stuff. So it's,
No doubt. It's one of the things that we are, as we go down these kind of, especially when we're dealing with performance issues and we're trying to figure out where things are going wrong, we can make guesses that things are not set up right, but we really don't know, so in some cases, or that there's bad cabling or there's a switch that's flaking out or whatever without the right tools. And I believe in the right tools. It's definitely one of those things that's on my list for sure. Yeah. But there's too many. There's this one and there's that one.
There is. And actually somebody has asked me, and I've started to put together, somebody asked me a while back to do a rundown on the different tools. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to probably split it into separate shows and talk about them, but I am going to do that. And the other thing I was getting ready to say is, you know, the Domotes is a good tool to have in the field to help with a lot of that. If you've got managed switches in an environment,
right,
that will help tremendously. So I'm almost to the point where I'm saying, if you have a NetAlly tool and you have Domotes, you probably have 95% of the network tools that you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't quote me on that. And I hope nobody comes after me and says, oh, but you didn't talk about this tool. And
that's right.
Send it to me. Let me play with it. And I'll let you know.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So well, that was an interesting little left turn we took there.
Yes, we did. So that's what these shows are, right? They're, you know, just you put something together, you put together a structure, and you could talk about something else. It's all good.
One of the things that I found, and I hope that people appreciate this, is, you know, sitting and talking to somebody, you know, these shows really shouldn't just be an interview. Here's a question, answer a question. You know, oh, what tool do you like? What tool do you not like? Well, why? You know, why do you do what you do, and why does it work for you? I mean, it may not work for everybody else, but it works for you. It may work for somebody else.
Right.
And that's all I try to do, is to be the person to connect everybody.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, some of my stories make no sense, and I'm not a good storyteller, and I know I don't do as much as some techs out there, because I, you know, don't play around with, you know, software all the time or all the other stuff, but you know, my business is good. I like where I'm at.
Yeah. Similar concept, you know, we do a lot with what we have, and, you know, and obviously we work with in a pretty interesting vertical, which gets us involved in some things that maybe not everyone's exposed to, but, I can't, you know, do a pretty wired rack, you know, though you see those wiring porn kind of photos on Facebook all the time. It's not me, you know. I'll get somebody else to do that. I can't. It's, I don't have the patience or the attention to do something like that. But you give me I need to solve this automation thing. Like that's I'm all over that. You know, that's the stuff that I do all the time, which is why I love leveraging some of the tools that we have. You know, and when I was running the IT, when I was the IT director at Invesco, the investment firm I worked for, we didn't have this kind of stuff. You know, as a mid-tier firm, you know, we were 200 people in New York, 5,000 people worldwide. We had, I don't know if anyone remembers SMS, but we had SMS to like install stuff and run scripts and things like that. And, you know, we were playing around with all these other tools that were just kind of coming out. But that was this stuff that we did that I really dived into, is scripting and automation and things like that. And I love that. That's the stuff that I eat up.
No. What are you using for most of your automation? Are you doing PowerShell, or are you creating your
own? It's primarily PowerShell now. Okay. You know, most of the stuff now PowerShell has gotten really good. And Datto is good at deploying PowerShell scripts. So, you know, one of the most recent ones that I'm one of these copy and paste coders for sure. And, you know, to kind of point to the IT glue stuff, there was a script put together that was, it actually would go out, change the local password for the device, you know, create a local admin account, or change the admin password on the local device, and then take that and store it in IT glue. So this way we don't have the same local password across all of our devices.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, somebody knows what the local admin password, it's kind of game over, right? You have access to everything, especially if you use the same password everywhere. So this was kind of my, fix for that. The other thing that it did was, and this kind of, I got burned with this recently, if the machine has BitLocker installed, it would also collect the BitLocker key and store that in IT glue. So it's those kind of things that I'm really kind of, especially nowadays, geeking out on, and just kind of collecting that information, having that information available so that when we do hit an issue that we can deal with it. So that's the stuff that kind of gets me going.
Funny you should mention that, because I don't know, going on 2 years now, I keep telling myself I need to learn PowerShell better. I've collected a few scripts that work and stuff, and I do have IT glue, and I've heard other people talk about being able to leverage PowerShell to do some of these things. So I may need to call you back and get a couple of other people together and talk about all of this, because that is definitely, when it comes to automation and PowerShell and, you know, interlocking them with all of our tools and stuff. That is something that I do need to do a better job of. So
yeah, PowerShell's fun. You could do a lot with it. And there's a couple of good guys out there off Reddit and what have you that put out some interesting little tidbits. And then you collect that and you put it in your own way and you get going. And it saves a lot of time. And I think the kind of guy you are, Marvin, in terms, especially with stuff you do on the network, I think you'd find a lot of benefit if you spent a little time on it. The PowerShell's, it's weird. It's tricky. If you've learned coding in the past, which I had, you know, I had a coding background before getting into it. It actually ended up being harder for me to deal with because it was very different than a traditional programming language. So, you know, most of my scripting up to that point was in VBScript, and then I had done some C++ programming prior to that. PowerShell is like a different animal. And I had to kind of break the way my mind worked around that stuff. But once you kind of get it going, you can hack together a lot of interesting things that work really well.
All right. I'll have to look into it. I did not come from a programming background. I was pretty much a hardware guy and got into networking, and software has kind of always still been on the side. So I gotta focus on that.
We all have our, you know, different hats.
Our strengths and our weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
All right. Robbie. Well, we've gone over an hour here, and I know that we need to get off our lunch break and back to work. So I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, Marvin.
So, folks, Rafi Jamgachian from Triada Networks and triadanet.com. And if you want to send Rafi a little email, send it to him, rj@triadanet.com. You can give his office a call at 201-297-7778. And I'll have all of this information on the show note when you head over to podnuts.com and check out the show. All right, Rafi, any last words?
No, thanks for having me, Marvin. I appreciate it. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right, great. And for those of you listening, I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. If you are watching us on Facebook or the YouTube, please hit the subscribe button so that when we do come live, you will be notified and get to see all of the upcoming shows live. And be sure to subscribe on the Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from to get all of the latest shows. And on the show notes, be sure to go in and check our affiliates and friends of the show. We talked about Connect Me Voice earlier. Domotes is in there. Instant House Call is in there. Freedom Voice, all the other people that help support the network and keep us doing what we do. So that's going to do it for this episode, folks. Thank you very much. And until next time, holla.